Hey, this is Kevin from Kevin's Barbecue Joints, and welcome to episode 123 of the Kevin's Barbecue Joints podcast. And in this episode of Barbecue City Guide, where I talk to a barbecue expert about where to go for barbecue in a specific city or region, I talked to Jim Ockmoody about Georgia. This one is super fantastic. We first get into his history and his background. His grandfather put on these large barbecues. We talk about those, and then his father's connection to barbecue, which leads us into Brunswick stew. And there's a 5 or 10 minute portion of this on Brunswick stew alone and the different types of Brunswick stew, and then other things that are tied to Brunswick stew within Georgia. We also talk about the Southern Foodways Alliance, which he is connected to, and all about the Southern Foodways Alliance and how important it is. And then we talk about Barbecue Nation Atlanta, which is an exhibition that's running through September, which he's connected to, and that which leads us then to his book that's coming out this May called Smoke Lore, which is a short history of barbecue in America, which sounds fantastic. I did this interview at the end of last year, so a couple of the references that we make are referring to last year, but it's completely topical. And the one sad thing, though, is that Bee's Cracklin' in Atlanta burnt down in the meantime. So we do talk about Bee's Cracklin' in Atlanta, as well as a Savannah location, as places to go, because he does give a list of barbecue spots to go in Georgia. So that is sad, but as a lot of you know, he is going to rebuild. He and Nikki are going to rebuild, so Bee's Cracklin' in Atlanta will be there again. It's the only interview that I've done so far that has references to Otis Redding, the Allman Brothers, Clarence Thomas, as well as Mike Rowe's Dirty Jobs. I know you're going to really enjoy this. And as always, I'm super excited that I have the Smoke Sheet on board as a sponsor for this podcast. The Smoke Sheet is a barbecue newsletter, a weekly barbecue newsletter that you can check out at bbqnewsletter.com. That's where you can sign up. Super easy to sign up. This is a collaboration of Sean Ludwig, who is NYC Barbecue, as well as Ryan Cooper, who is Barbecue Tourist. They travel around the country visiting barbecue joints, sampling things, writing about it, and this is a compilation of all of those efforts and their passion towards barbecue news. Every week on Wednesday, you'll be receiving a newsletter that you will read cover to cover. It covers barbecue events, ones that are coming up, so that way you don't miss out. It covers barbecue joint openings and closings and things within the barbecue world that you definitely need to know about, or if you're interested in barbecue, which I would assume you are because you're listening to this, you'll definitely find it a companion to the barbecue news you receive on a daily basis from whatever other source you were using. It's also great because there's links and write-ups with the latest podcasts and YouTube stuff, as well as a recipe of the week. It's chock full of information. The Smoke Sheet, again, is available at bbqnewsletter.com. That's bbqnewsletter.com. The Smoke Sheet, barbecue news worth consuming. And if you're liking these, I would appreciate it if you subscribe. That way you don't miss out on any of them. I'm putting out one or two per week at the minimum, as well as there's over 100 back episodes that I think on most podcast networks you have to subscribe, so that way you don't miss out on those and you have access to all of those. Also, I have a website at kevinsbbqjoints.com with links to my podcasts and all my YouTube stuff. And then also Abe Delgado, who has the I Crush Barbecue podcast, and myself. We put out a weekly list of all of the barbecue pop-ups and underground barbecue spots in Los Angeles. Try to make it as current as possible. It's growing like crazy. So you could check that out at kevinsbbqjoints.com as well. But thanks so much. Enjoy this.
Well, my name's Jim Ockmoody. I'm a journalist from Atlanta. I was a reporter and editor at the Atlanta Journal-Constitution for about 30 years. And in the last half of my time there, I did a lot of food writing. Mm-hmm. In fact, me and the food editor at the Atlanta paper did a barbecue sauce cookbook in 1995, the Ultimate Barbecue Sauce Cookbook, which as far as I know was the first book that was ever devoted entirely to barbecue sauces and rubs and marinades and all that.
Yeah, I think you're right.
Yeah, and then there were a bunch of them right after that, mm-hmm. It did pretty well. And then I'm kind of an expert on barbecue, and it's very much in my blood, both literally and figuratively.
It is now.
my grandfather was a noted pit master in Northwest Georgia, in Bartow County, which is about 40, 50 miles northwest of Atlanta.
I know that.
He used to, back in the 30s, 40s, and early 50s, he used to cook community barbecues, sheriff's barbecues, various things. In my father's diary from those years, when he was in college, he mentions about 12 or 14 times that his daddy was cooking barbecues. He's got some reference in there about he cooked the sheriff's barbecue in Cartersville last week, and they paid him $16.42. Wow.
Wow.
I guess it sounds like, with that uneven number, it sounds like they passed the hat.
It does, actually,
and,
that's true.
But anyway, he was written up. I mean, this was actually a fairly family heirloom when I was growing up. My grandfather, Bob Ockmoody, was written up in the Saturday Evening Post. On the weekend of July the 4th, 1954, they did a big article about barbecue in the South. It was called Dixie's Most Disputed Dish. That was the headline. And they just happened to go to this big barbecue in Georgia, the Euharley Farmers Club Barbecue, which had been going on for a century. And during the late 40s and 50s, my grandfather was the pit master there.
Wow.
And he was the first picture you see when you open up that spread is my grandfather overseeing the pits.
Oh, that's crazy. That's really neat.
No, it is very neat. And it also points out something. Well, I'll go ahead and talk a little bit about Georgia barbecue, and then I'll tell you a couple of more things about my connection to it and sort of my bona fides. Georgia barbecue absolutely does not, it isn't the first thing that people think of. You know, we have the shorthand way of thinking about barbecue in America now.
For sure.
People always talk about the four barbecue hotbeds, Texas, Kansas City, Memphis, and the Carolinas, particularly North Carolina. And those are all great barbecue places. There's no disparaging them. They are barbecue hotbeds. But it's a shorthand that was kind of invented by journalists like me, and it greatly oversimplifies that.
For sure.
As you well know, there's all sorts of barbecue all over America, lots of different specialties, not all just in the South and Texas. There's a lot of good barbecue outside the homeland regions. One of the reasons we think about those places as being barbecue hotbeds and don't think so much about a place like Georgia is because our sense of what barbecue is has changed. Back when they wrote that article in 1954 for the Saturday Evening Post, people did not think of barbecue primarily as being something you cooked in your backyard or something even that you ate at restaurants. Barbecue back in those days was thought of as a big public event.
Mm, okay.
It was something like the Euharley Farmers Club that my grandfather was cooking. At that time in 1954, what really loomed in people's idea of barbecue was things like the Big Barbecue and Gone with the Wind, the 12 Oaks Barbecue.
That's very true.
And our political barbecues, political.
Yeah, and a lot of, like, there's even, I've seen articles like White House barbecues and yeah.
Oh yeah. And Georgia, back in those days, Georgia loomed much larger in the consciousness of barbecue because it was very associated with big event barbecues, political campaign barbecues, and the barbecue in Gone with the Wind, the barbecue that my grandfather was cooking at that was in the Saturday Evening Post. So if your idea of what a barbecue is a big event. I mean, the writer of that article in 54, he called Georgia the epicenter of American barbecue.
Interesting.
I don't think anybody would say that now, but it's not because barbecue is not still a real big deal in Georgia. It's really more because our sense of what barbecue is has evolved.
So has there been any shift at all? People started to look at Georgia barbecue again in a different light? Or is it just, again, it's still that swath that people make that the four regions are for?
Well, I mean, I would argue that when you talk about those four regions, what you're really overlooking is the extent to which the entire crescent of the Deep South is one big barbecue, particularly true, pork hotbed. And if you focus on those four places, you do sort of disparage the great barbecue that's in Georgia. And there's great barbecue in Alabama. You certainly disparage
that. Oh, yeah.
And South Carolina, people talk about South Carolina barbecue, but it sort of takes a second place to North Carolina barbecue in these discussions, too. So I would say that really from the North Carolina-Virginia line all the way across into Texas, with a time out for Louisiana, probably, there's this one big southern pork barbecue hotbed and should be considered... I mean, that's really the ancestral homeland of barbecue.
Yeah, yeah.
And George is the buckle of that pork.
It is the buckle. That's a great way to put it. And that's kind of why I like to do these, is because I feel like a lot of places are often overlooked when they're in Georgia. There are dozens, if not 100 barbecue spots that people can go out and search for and find and go off the beaten path and kind of see the history of barbecue. Was your father involved with barbecue at all?
Oh yeah, my father was he was actually more involved with Brunswick stew, which we can talk about, which is, you know, a very familiar side dish to barbecue. I don't know why it's a side dish. It's a meal in itself.
It is,
you
for
eat
sure.
Brunswick stew and barbecue, you're getting total cholesterol overload. But that's
and
the way it's
it's
always
nap
been
time
done.
Too.
Yeah. I've got a book coming out right now about the history of barbecue.
Oh, that's great.
It's coming out next spring. And when what made me think about it was the copy editor on it could not believe me that Brunswick stew was a side dish. She just kept saying, "Oh no, this looks like a main dish." And I said, "No, you need to go to these barbecue places. It is served as a side dish.
For sure.
It makes no sense. It shouldn't be, but that's the way it's served." My daddy was a Brunswick stew maker of great accomplishment, and so was my Uncle Earl, his little brother.
Okay.
And you know, one of the things I did in the last 10 years of my life was sit there at my father's knee and learn how to make Brunswick stew the way he made it, which is a very typical Piedmont, Georgia Brunswick stew without a whole bunch of vegetables in it. It's mostly corn and tomatoes and actually more than pork. It's got pork, beef, and chicken in it.
Brunswick stew is different at different spots too, right? Like it's all kind of maybe family recipes. Is that sort of
Brunswick stew is something that is you don't find it all across the South.
No.
You mainly find it in the southern Atlantic states. It's particularly associated with Virginia, North Carolina, and Georgia.
Okay.
And it's different in Virginia, which is probably where it originated because Virginia's just was settled earlier. Mm-hmm. It's made primarily with chicken. Mm-hmm. In North Carolina and Georgia, it's fairly similar. It's red. It's got a lot of tomatoes and corn in it. It's got all these different meats. The way we make it in my part of Georgia is it has a real cider vinegar twang to it.
Ah.
And we always put hot stuff in it too. And it can be really good. But when it's traditionally been served, which is at big barbecues during the summer, during the hot months, that's the worst time to have it actually, because it makes you to sweat like a pig. The best time to do it, what we do in my family is we make it in the winter because it's a great hearty winter warm-up sort of thing.
Brunswick stew, like a lot of people that are listening to this or watching this probably have never had it, and they maybe have just heard it in passing. So this is something, I'm glad you're explaining it.
Brunswick stew is a very distinctive thing, very identified with barbecue in Georgia, and there are different types of Brunswick stew in Georgia. Down in South Georgia, a lot of them make it with whole hog heads and things like that, but we were never that grisly, being suburban Atlanta folks. You know, it's one of these one-pot barbecue dishes that's very identified with Southern barbecue. You got Brunswick stew in Virginia, North Carolina, and Georgia. You got barbecued hash in South Carolina, which is sort of made from pig offal. And people in South Carolina love that stuff. I'm not so crazy about it. I was judging a barbecue contest in the Carolinas one time, and they asked me if I wanted to help them out with judging hash. And I said, of course, I said yes, because I'll put anything into my mouth. But, you know, after about six hashes, I was regretting it.
Is it really rich? I haven't even had a hash before.
It's very rich.
Yeah.
It's served over rice.
Yeah.
And it also, you find it in eastern Georgia and places that are, you know, proximity to South Carolina. I've got my mother's folks are from the Augusta area, and they do hash there. Yeah.
And so it's a way to use all the parts to be able to use
exactly,
the entire
yeah.
animal.
And then there's a thing, and then there's a dish which I'm sure you've heard of, called burgoo, which is big in Kentucky, and it's a hunter's stew, kind of like Brunswick stew, but it has its own lore and attachments in Kentucky, and it's very associated with big events up there. So there are these mysterious one-pot barbecue dishes that usually use things that are left over from the barbecue, that are very much part of the barbecue culture of the South. They have a lot of regional specificity to them. If you drive from Atlanta to Alabama, you get to about the Alabama line. It's kind of like the Brunswick stew line. You don't find it west of there.
That's so funny. Is Brunswick stew something that people sell out of, or do they generally always have that?
They probably ought to sell out of it sooner. It's usually something that they have. It can be really, really good. And it's also funny. It plays a part in a lot of arguments. The people in Brunswick County, Virginia, I think that's the name of it. They claim to have invented Brunswick stew. There's a historic marker there that I've taken a picture of.
Oh, that's funny.
People in North Carolina claim to have invented it. Brunswick, Georgia, down on the coast, okay, also claims to have invented Brunswick stew. And it's kind of a funny claim because they say that it was invented at a particular event in 1895, which is hilarious. Virginia was making it 100 years before that. But they've got a sign down there claiming, if there's a rest stop, I think, on I-95 in Columbus, in Brunswick, where they actually have an old rusty pot on a pedestal, like this is the official beginning of Brunswick stew. And of course, everybody knows it isn't so, but it's fun.
That's great. Actually, when I do visit the area, I'll take a picture and I'll text it to you.
And you should visit that area because one of the very best barbecue places in Georgia and in the South, or really in the nation, is down there on St. Simon's Island, Southern Seoul.
I'm friends with those guys. Through the internet, yeah. I've known those guys for forever, it seems. But I've always heard amazing things. I want to talk specifically about them too. So let's talk about Southern Foodways Alliance, because I'm curious.
Okay.
Did you create that? Are you one of the founders?
Well, I'm listed as one of the founders, but that sounds more grandiose than what it should be. the driving forces for the Southern Foodways Alliance is an organization that's at the University of Mississippi in Oxford. They have an institute there called the Center for the Study of Southern Cultures, which is great. Anybody who's spent a lot of time writing about what the South is and trying to parse out what's Southern and what isn't and all the gnarly parts of our history, the Center for Study of Southern Culture at Ole Miss is great. They have lots of people there who do precisely that, and I've quoted them a million times over the years. There was a young graduate student from Georgia who went to Ole Miss named John T. Edge, mm-hmm, who had the idea for starting the Southern Foodways Alliance.
Okay.
And he hooked up with a person who had a similar name, John Edgerton,
who was
a really terrific food writer and really great guy who lived in Nashville, who had been trying to put together an organization like that for some time.
Okay.
They got together in the late 90s and basically summoned about 50 people from around the South. They were journalists. They were academics. They were people who were in the food business, chefs. It was a wide variety of people. And I got invited to the organizational meeting, which was held at the Southern Living magazine offices in Birmingham.
Oh, that's so cool.
I got invited because I was writing about food a lot for the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, which was the largest newspaper in the Southeast. Right. And they wanted the AJC to be represented there, understandably. And I was happy to go because I was very interested. I mean, it's a great organization. They have these symposia every year. They have gatherings. They do barbecue trails, Boudin trails in Louisiana, things like that. But their most valuable thing they do, which is what we all wanted them to concentrate on at that organizational meeting, was documenting the region's cuisine, documenting the people behind it, documenting our traditions. And
so important.
And also delving into all of the stories that are intertwined with it about our culture and about our politics and our history. No surprise to anybody that the food story in the South is intimately wrapped up with race. Yeah. It is our central story. And that's something I've written about so many times over the years. And it's certainly a large part of the barbecue story.
Yeah. And it's something that as much you don't want to just hide from that, because that is it's intertwined. It's part of the culture, and it's part of, and food is a huge part of that culture.
But SFA, Southern Foodways Alliance, they have these big symposia at Ole Miss every fall, and they're really hot tickets. And they've been doing them now for almost 20 years. And the only food subject that they have done twice has been barbecue.
Oh, really?
They did it in 2002. And they did it again in 2012. In 2002, it was more like classic barbecue subjects. I was a speaker at the 2002 when I spoke about barbecue and politics.
Okay.
Which is a really rich subject.
Very rich subject.
And then in 2012, the focus was more sort of barbecue and the international community and sort of international currents with it. It was a more updated take on barbecue. But that tells you right there, barbecue is so central to the South's idea of itself. to its food culture that it's the only food that's been dealt with twice at the SFA symposia.
That's incredible. How, and now if someone wants to, it's because that's something that someone can just join or donate to, or is it something?
Oh yeah, the SFA is a membership organization.
Okay.
You can go onto their website, which I don't know what it is, probably sfa.org. I can't remember.
I'll have a link to it. I think
and,
it is.
Yeah, you can join it, and they have all sorts of events. Their website is terrific, and this barbecue history that I've just finished writing, they were just a tremendous resource because they've got all these oral histories that mm-hmm. have been done with pit masters from the transplanted Mississippians in Chicago, the folks in Memphis, a lot of them in Central Texas. Great stories in Georgia and just all over the place. I think there's something like 100 oral histories that have to do with barbecue that you can just actually listen to or watch videos of on their website.
Yeah, those are
so
fascinating.
They've done exactly what we envisioned them doing when mm-hmm. we organized it.
Yeah, no, it's a great resource, and I'll put links to it. But I would love to go one year to the symposium, and it's a great primer to use for barbecue trips and jaunts.
I've only been about 5 times. I've been to the 2 barbecue ones because it usually coincides with a family reunion that my family does up in the North Georgia Mountains. So I haven't been to that many of them, but it's a really wonderful event. It's a very tough ticket when they put. Yeah. These, particularly the barbecue ones. The only way I got into the second barbecue one was that John T. held out a couple of tickets for me.
That's nice.
because I had spoken at the first one, that's mm-hmm. why.
Yeah.
And they, when they put them on sale in late July, I think it is, the beginning of August, they usually sell out like within an hour or so.
I would imagine, yeah. It's one of those things where you have to pay attention.
They do a lot of other events too, though, but it's a great organization. And let me go ahead and tell you this a little bit of background too. The one of the reasons we're speaking is because I know a lot about barbecue and have all this connection to it. The Atlanta History Center, which is the really one of the finest history museums in America, it's the big history museum here in Atlanta. They had an idea about 10 years ago to do an exhibition about the history and culture of barbecue,
mm-hmm.
and they asked me to be an advisor on it, and then I was asked to write the companion book. And then a little over a year ago, they asked me to be the guest curator for the exhibition. And so I am up to my jowls in barbecue with them. And that exhibition opened a few months ago at the History Center in Atlanta. It's really, I mean, I was involved with it, so I like it. But
I've heard amazing things.
It's a fun exhibition. I've walked Daniel Vaughn with Texas mm-hmm. Monthly and a bunch of other folks through it. It's really good. It's going to be up through the end of through next September. It's going to be up for a long time. So it'll be up most of next year too.
Yeah, I was sad. I thought I had missed out because I thought it was this September, and I thought, oh, gosh.
They extended it. It's going to be, I don't think it's coming down until about September 29th or something like that next year. It's called Barbecue Nation, mm-hmm. which isn't, you know, a little bit of a cliche name, but, you know, there it is.
It works.
And the book, and the reason I mention that is because the book I'm doing, which is going to be published, is going to come out next May.
Mm-hmm.
It's the companion book to the exhibition, but it's an illustrated history of American barbecue, not just Southern barbecue. It's all about American barbecue. And the name, the University of Georgia Press is publishing it, and they didn't like the name Barbecue Nation. They thought it was a little bit too trite, and so they went with a pun that I had come up with some time ago. The official name of the book is Smoke Lore. A Short History of Barbecue in America.
Oh.
And you're not going to be able to see this, but this is a proof that I just got earlier this year of the title.
Oh, that looks, oh, that's great. No, people can see that. Is that okay? Can I show people that?
Oh, yeah, of course. As a matter of fact, I'm way overdue to put it on Facebook and say, hey, look, it's the cover of my book.
That is great. I'll promote the heck out of that. That's so neat.
But it's coming out next May, and it's about 60,000 words of text and about 210 images. And some recipes, like about 20 recipes, mostly illustrative, historic type recipes. But the illustrations are, which was a lot of the work of the book, are they're like Library of Congress things. They're old restaurant matchbooks, menus. One of the richest sources was cookbook covers from the 50s, which are really fun.
But one of
the richest sources was like advertisements from the 40s and 50s and 60s and the magazines, which is the period when barbecue is starting to really go national and get into the backyard. And you see a lot of ads. Some of those are just hilarious. And we had so much fun doing all those. But the book is going to be responsible, you know, accurate history, and it's well documented. But above all, it's barbecue and it's fun.
Yeah. No, and if you love barbecue and if you're into barbecue, that sounds like something you'd want to just buy and read the whole thing one night. Like that's fascinating. I'm excited.
I've had so much fun with it. And one of the things before we start talking more specifically about Georgia places, one of the things that I really wanted to emphasize in it is people in the South. And people in Texas tend to act like barbecue is a wholly owned subsidiary of their culture, mm-hmm. and that they, you know, they feel very protective and they feel like they own it.
That's very true.
And of course, there's reason for that. There's some reason for that to be true. But barbecue is actually a much broader story than the South in Texas. Barbecue is something that actually touches almost every corner of the country. If you have a more ecumenical definition of what barbecue is, and you can argue that actually that's a very justified definition, because what the natives were doing when Columbus's men first discovered them doing it, it wasn't cooking a pig for 12 hours or a brisket. It was basically something more like smoking fish or grilling iguanas. Mm-hmm. And so who's to say that, you know, putting something on the grill and putting a brat on the grill in Chicago, that has a very definite kinship to barbecue.
For sure.
You have to have an ecumenical definition of this. And I mean, I've lived amongst Georgians all my life, and they always say, well, that's not barbecue. That's mm-hmm. not pig cooking for 14 hours. And of course, that is our classic definition of Southern barbecue, but you got to have a broader mind than that.
I think so too.
It's an American story. It's not just a Southern story. It's not just a Southwestern story.
And that's also with these two. I'm trying to highlight barbecue in general, the passion behind barbecue, because a lot of people are really passionate about their own specific type of barbecue, but they're all like, if you're, say you're in Chicago, like you said, or say in Iowa, and you're passionate about the presentation and what you're doing, who's to say that that's not barbecue, and who's to say that that's not just as good as anything else?
No, I take the same attitude about barbecue that the founders of the Kansas City Barbecue Society did, which is they fairly early on had to decide whether or not we're going to have a restrictive definition of barbecue that's all about purism, or are we going to have a big tent definition that invites everybody in with all the different varieties of it, some of which we might not terribly approve of, but it's still, that's what they call barbecue. Mm-hmm. And they went for the latter one, and to me, that's the way to go, and that's the way I think about it.
I agree. Let's jump into barbecue joint.
Okay, well, let's talk about the Atlanta area first, because Atlanta, when I first started writing about barbecue maybe 25 years ago, I don't think Atlanta had that many good barbecue places. We had some old traditional places that everybody talked about, but there really weren't that many places that were great. I remember when the first Super Bowl came to Atlanta in 1994, I had to write a little thing for the Journal Constitution about which 10 barbecue places in Atlanta should you go to, and I had trouble finding 10 that I could really vouch for.
Wow.
and to out-of-towners, because really we were kind of tired. What's happened in the last 25 years is what's happened in Dallas and Brooklyn, mm-hmm. and a bunch of other places, is that there's been a real rebirth of craft barbecue and really good, interesting barbecue places. And that's happened hugely in Atlanta.
To a large extent.
Yeah. So most of the really good barbecue places in Atlanta have opened in the last 10 or 12 years.
Okay.
Among the ones that I like are, there's one that's actually a guy from Savannah, Brian Furman.
Mm-hmm.
In Savannah, he opened up a place down there that's a traditional sort of coastal South Carolina and coastal Georgia whole hog place. Mm-hmm. It's called B's Cracklin',
yes.
Letter B, apostrophe S. He opened up an outpost in Atlanta a couple of years ago, and now this is his base of operations, and it's real good.
And it's whole hog, right? Isn't he doing
whole hog. It is whole hog. One of the things that bedevils people talking about barbecue in Georgia is that Georgia really is a crossroads state, and Atlanta is the epitome of a crossroads place.
Okay.
Atlanta, is full of people who moved here from elsewhere in the South. So you get a lot of barbecue places in Atlanta that are very good, where they will say it's Texas style or it's Carolina style. There is actually an inherent Georgia style, but most people, it's not as good a marketing thing as saying it's a Texas or Carolina style.
That's true.
Or Memphis ribs, or, you know, whatever. But Bee's Cracklin' in Northwest Atlanta is really good.
Yeah, I've heard it, and it's him and his wife, Nikki.
Another place that's gotten a lot of attention that I think is really terrific is Heirloom Market Barbecue. They are on the Chattahoochee River.
Okay.
Just not too far from Bee's, actually, only about maybe 4 or 5 miles is the crow flies.
Oh, that's great to know. Okay.
Yeah, and they're in a little storefront. I think it's one of the, we used to have here, one of the convenience store chains was called Magic Market, and back when I was growing up, they would have little wishbone fried chicken places next to them, and I'm looking at, it looks like it's the Wishbone and Magic Market thing that's been turned into the barbecue place.
I think that's interesting.
Oh, that's really anyway, Heirloom Market Barbecue is run by this couple who's a Southerner. I think he's from Tennessee, and she is Korean, his wife.
Mm-hmm.
And she used to be a pop star, K-pop star in Korea.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, you can.
I knew they had Korean influences, but oh wow, that's so neat.
And then after her career sort of started to cool off, she went to culinary school. And that's where she met her husband, Cody. And they run this barbecue place that's in this little hole in the wall up there that always has a line coming out the door. And there's hardly anywhere to eat there. You have to pretty much get takeout. Or the trick I know is that you can go down about a half a mile. There's an apartment complex, a condo complex that's on the Chattahoochee River. That it used to be a swinging singles place. In fact, if you've ever seen the Tom Hanks Leonardo DiCaprio movie Catch Me If You Can,
uh-huh. Yeah.
There's a whole sequence in there where he's impersonating a doctor in Atlanta,
mm-hmm.
And I think he's hanging out with a really lovely young Amy Adams, and the place where they're hanging out and all the single, they got two or three scenes where there are these singles parties going on. It's this place. It used to be called the Riverbend Apartments.
Oh, that's
but
funny.
There's a in the old recreation center where Leo and Amy would have been partying. It's a coffee place now. It's called the Chattahoochee Coffee Company. And what you do, it's a gated community, but what you do is you get your barbecue at Heirloom,
okay.
You drive down to this place, you go up to the gate, you tell them you're going to get coffee, they buzz you in because a lot of, you know, everybody come from outside is going to this coffee place. You go down there, you park at the coffee place, you take your barbecue down to the Chattahoochee, which is just a few steps away there, and you're at this wonderful place where there are some rapids, and people are usually out there kayaking if it's a decent time of year. You can eat your barbecue watching people kayaking by on the Chattahoochee, and then because you're probably feeling guilty about having lied about going to the coffee place, afterwards, if you feel like it, you go and get you a latte. You know?
That is a great tip. Oh, that is. I want to do that tomorrow.
No, it's really not. Well, you don't really want to do it right now because it's kind of cold in Atlanta today.
Yeah, that's fine.
It's like we had our first freeze this morning.
Okay.
But during the shoulder seasons in particular, that's a great place to do it. But their barbecue is really good. It's a very good traditional Southern pork. But what really, really makes theirs memorable is that they have a Korean influence slaw that goes with it. They have a slaw that it's a couple of steps in the direction of kimchi. It's got some heat to it, and it makes slaw. I didn't grow up eating it this way, but I love the way they do barbecue in Memphis and Carolina with slaw.
Yeah.
Slaw is so good on a barbecue sandwich, and kimchi slaw is particularly good with it.
And they've been around for a good amount of time. It seems like I've heard great things for like 10 years or so.
Well, I don't know if they've been there 10 years. It's probably between 5 and 10 years.
Okay.
But they've gotten a lot of attention, and I certainly pay them some attention in my book, too, because I think they're so important to show sort of the invigorating international influence
without
on traditional
doubt,
barbecue methods.
Definitely.
But they're really good. There's a couple of Texas guys in town called Fox Brothers.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really good barbecue place. The problem is you can never park there. And
why is that?
They're very, very, they're probably the most popular barbecue place in Georgia.
Okay.
And I think they have the barbecue concession at the new Atlanta Braves baseball stadium,
too. I think you're right. I think I did see something like that.
Yeah, right. And they're really, really good. But they're so popular. They're in a place in an in-town neighborhood, Inman Park, where the parking's really limited and people have to park on the street. And there have been skirmishes between them and the neighbors. So it's a... If you can find a parking place, it's a great place to go to. But Fox Brothers is one of the finest in town.
But they do, and they do have brisket on their menu too, right? It's not just...
Oh, yeah. But they do lots of different things. Yeah. And they're very, very, you know, they don't... I think they might have a couple of gas hybrid cookers that they use for certain things, but for the most part, they're doing all wood, mm-hmm. as is Bees and Erling.
Gotcha.
And I just did an article about this whole question of gas versus wood for Atlanta Magazine.
Okay.
And, you know, it's funny because, I mean, I'm all for all wood, and I think some of the best barbecue you get is on wood. But the gas hybrid smokers, if the right people are using them and use the wood properly, it can be great. And some of the best places I know, well, you know, Joe's Kansas City in Kansas City uses gas hybrid cookers, and that's about the best pork barbecue sandwich I've ever had. It just depends on the expertise and intention of the person using it.
Exactly. It's the person that gets it and just decides, I'm just going to put my meat in and not pay attention and not care. And that's the person that's not doing a good job. But if you have the expertise, like you said, you could put out fine product.
Well, and there's a place in Northwest Atlanta that's fairly new. It's been about 3 years there. It's called Das Barbecue, like a German word, D-A-S.
I've seen the name. I don't know much about
it. It's really good. It's really good.
Okay.
It's really good. They have some of the most gorgeous smokers in Georgia, but they smoke everything, but then they finish it up on gas, which is a controversial thing, but they get great results, and it's really good. I've had catering from them a couple of times, and I would recommend them.
Do they do a large swath of different barbecue, or is it just pork-based mostly?
Oh, no. I mean, look, when I was growing up, you couldn't find a brisket in Atlanta, but everybody's got everything now.
Gotcha. Okay.
I mean, you know, yeah. I mean, Das Barbecue, actually, the best thing they have is their brisket.
Okay.
But they do really good pork, too.
Do you know why they're called Das Barbecue? Are they German?
I think they're called Das Barbecue because they sort of went overboard on the Texas connection and the German population of Central Texas and decided that was a good idea.
Gotcha. Okay.
When I first heard the name, it made me think of that old movie about the U-boat, Das Boot.
Yeah, exactly. But I think that probably dates the two of us, but it's
well, look at me. I'm dated. You can,
yeah, so am I.
I am what I am. I'm right in the middle of the baby ring.
Yeah, that's the takeaway from this. You have to accept who you are.
That's right, yes. Let's see. Who else in Atlanta? Oh, there's a great place in Chamblee, Georgia, which is north east of Atlanta, called Old Brick Pit.
Okay.
And it's in a converted Dairy Queen. I mean, I can look at it and know it was a Dairy Queen.
That's really
it. It opened up in the mid-70s, and they have got an L-shaped floor pit that has a real long draw that draws the smoke over the meat.
Oh.
They have, it's a very traditional Piedmont-style pork barbecue they do there. It's a chopped barbecue. They've got really good traditional Brunswick stew that's not unlike what my family always made, so it seems very familiar to me. I like that place a lot. And one of the reasons I like it is when they built their pit in the mid-70s, they based it on the oldest barbecue pit in Georgia. There's a place south of Atlanta called Fresh Air.
Yeah, yeah.
In Jackson, Georgia, and that's just like one of my best, that's one of the best barbecue names ever, Fresh Air.
Fresh Air, I know, it's...
And it opened up in the late 1920s on the U.S. highway between Atlanta and Macon. And Fresh Air has an L-shaped pit that they've been using since, I think, about 1950. And when the people at Old Brick Pit in Chamblee opened their place up, they went to Jackson, to Fresh Air, and basically said, we want to replicate that pit. So their pit has been around for over 40 years now, so it is an heirloom pit, but it is actually an homage to an even more heirloom pit, which I love.
I love that too, and for people like me or you or anybody else listening, that's a pit nerd. That's really cool. I want to see those.
Yeah,
I love seeing the really cool old pits.
There's a good place right in the middle of Buckhead, which is sort of the she uptown district of Atlanta, where a lot near the governor's mansion,
a lot of athletes and
a lot of rich folk live. It's called Lovey's, and it's the guy who runs that was really he got some smokers from there's a company down in Middle Georgia outside of Macon called Stumps that makes smokers for the competition.
I've heard of that name.
All that. Yeah, he got some Stumps smokers, and actually, it's kind of funny. He had to, he had a lot of dealings with the fire marshals in Atlanta to figure out how he could do this from scratch. He actually had to build. He had to build an outbuilding that's only an outbuilding by about separated from the main building by like 6 inches.
Just to allow it to comply.
Just to satisfy the fire marshals. But it was so important to him to do a traditional all wood pit like that in the middle of the wealthiest section of Atlanta.
That's hard to believe.
He jumped through those hoops and it's good barbecue too.
Wow, okay. Lovey's. Okay. Awesome. I'll put that on the list. That's awesome.
There's a group of places. One of the best barbecue places for a long time in Atlanta was up in East Cobb County, not all that far from the Braves new stadium. It's called, it was originally called Sam and Dave's.
Okay.
Now it's just called Sam's Barbecue One. But it was called Sam and Dave's because the principal partners were this guy, Sam Huff, who was a sort of a barbecue hobbyist who had been a lawyer, I think. And his two partners were both named Dave. One was Dave Poe and one of them was Dave Roberts.
Oh.
And they've all split up now, and they run three different barbecue places that are among the best in town. Sam's is still there and is still good. Dave Poe's Barbecue in suburban Marietta is very good.
Oh, wow.
And Community Q in Decatur, which you may have heard of, is run by Dave Roberts.
Oh, I didn't know that. I didn't know the connection.
And it's interesting. They all use gas hybrid cookers. But if you catch them on a good day when somebody's really knowing what they're doing with the smoke and the wood and all that, they're every bit as good as all the others.
Oh, that's great. Though, thank you for those. Oh, that's fantastic. But I honestly didn't know they were all kind of connected in some way.
They are. And there's a bunch of other places in the Atlanta area I could mention, but we probably ought to go out into the state a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, I mentioned Southern Soul and St. Simon's. It's in a converted gas station in a resort area down there. And I'm going to admit something to you right now. I've actually never eaten there because I haven't been to St. Simon's in quite a while. But I've got a zillion friends who used to work with me at the paper who live down there, retired down there, and they're all – I've gotten, like, invitations from about three people. Come stay with us this weekend and eat Southern Soul. You got to eat at Southern Soul. and everybody likes it. And I know Robert Moss has it on his list of 50 best for Southern living.
And I've recommended to friends and family that have gone to the South, like who've visited Georgia, and they've always just come back raving about that.
Enough people who I respect have said that it's really good, then I'm sure that it's really good, and I look forward to getting down to the coast and trying it. Now, I have tried the places in Savannah. I've been to the original Bee's Cracklin' in Savannah and liked it a lot. There's a place out going toward the beach in Savannah called Wiley's Championship Barbecue, which is also good. I think they started out in the contest circuit.
They did.
You know, so many of the barbecue places that are good now that have popped up in the last 15, 20 years have been folks who made got their chops on the contest circuit.
For sure. And that transition is not always easy, but it does work when you do it right.
Well, it's a lot. It's tough to do it on a regular basis instead of just doing it for the weekend.
Exactly. Yeah.
There's a place down there near where I've got a friend living out going toward the islands called Sandfly Barbecue, which I also would recommend.
I haven't heard of that.
Sandfly. It's in a little strip shopping center going out toward some of the beaches. It's actually out in that area, Savannah, where the Supreme Court Justice Clarence Thomas grew up.
Oh, interesting.
I don't know of any other connection he has to barbecue, but it's in that same area.
It's nice. It's interesting to weave Clarence Thomas into it.
Barbecue. Yeah. In Macon, which is my wife started out her journalism career in Macon. She used to work at the Macon paper, so we spent a lot of time in Macon. Macon's kind of a cool town, you know, Allman Brothers, Otis Redding, all that.
Oh, that's so cool.
And there's one of the oldest barbecue places in Georgia is in Macon. It's called Finchers.
F-I-N-C-H.
Yeah, Finchers. They've been around since the 30s. They've got a very old pit at their original location. It is as old, if not a little bit older, than the one at Fresh Air.
Oh.
And Finchers is good. They've got several locations around Macon. but they also figure in a great barbecue story. Fincher's is the place that sent barbecue into space.
Oh, okay.
In the late 80s, there was an astronaut, Sonny Carter, who was from Macon. And when he was getting ready to go up in the space shuttle around 1989, he requested a meal that was near and dear to him. He wanted some Fincher's barbecue to go into space.
Oh, that's great.
So if you go, and he did. And so if you go to the original Fincher's on the south side of Macon, you can see they've got up on the wall a certificate from NASA certifying that they were the first barbecue in space. And they've got like a little bit of the barbecues on display there.
Really?
What it actually is it's a little white tray of freeze-dried barbecue, and I'm sure that it's probably at this point about as appealing as petrified food from Pompeii.
Yeah, exactly. but it's probably a good photo.
yeah. But it's a good place. There's another place around Macon that I like a lot that's just outside of Macon in the little town of Clinton, Georgia. It's called Old Clinton Barbecue.
Oh, okay.
It's been around since about 1960. It's a really good middle Georgia chopped pork barbecue. Some of these older places out in the country or out in the small towns, they do not do brisket. The places where you're going to find all of the barbecue, all of the different types of barbecue and brisket and all that tend to be in Atlanta and larger cities.
Yeah.
Most of these other places are just going to do pork.
Gotcha.
But Clinton, Old Clinton is like that. One of the things I remember about Old Clinton is, you remember that series Mike Rowe used to do on cable TV?
Oh, yeah, Dirty Jobs.
Dirty Jobs, yeah. Well, he went to Old Clinton one time and cleaned out their pit.
Oh, I think I saw
and,
that.
And I remember he said, some of the best barbecue in Georgia comes from one of the dirtiest places you'd ever want to be in. And he got in there, and it was it's a great thing to watch on YouTube because, we don't really want to think about all the dripping grease and the grease fires and all that kind of stuff. But, smoking pigs in one place for a long time is a dirty thing, and you got to clean it out.
Dealing with fire and smoke, yeah, for sure.
Oh, yeah. So I like Old Clinton. I mentioned Fresh Air in Jackson. They've been around since 1929. It is one of my very favorite barbecue places in Georgia. Jackson's about midway between Atlanta and Macon. Fresh Air started out as an open air place, and it was just sawdust on the floor, which is why I got that name, Fresh Air.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
It's expanded a lot since then, but it is still a place that very much does it the old traditional way, and it's also very fond memories of it because I had an uncle that I liked a lot who was a career Air Force officer down in Warner Robins, Georgia, Robins Air Force Base. And when he used to come and visit us, he would usually stop by Fresh Air, this other place nearby that burned down called Stodge Hills, and he would bring us barbecue. And so it's, food is often just wrapped up in
fond
stories.
Yeah.
Columbus, Georgia, over on the Chattahoochee River, they've got, Country's Barbecue, which is a small chain over there, but the one downtown's particularly good because it's in an old Greyhound bus station.
That is so cool. I love all these places, how they're converted.
I know. I mean, the look and feel of barbecue places is such an important part of it, but Country's is good.
Okay.
Countries, a lot of the places over in Columbus have mustard sauce.
Okay.
A lot of people think mustard sauce is just a South Carolina thing.
Mm-hmm.
I would say it's more like a South Carolina, Georgia thing. In middle Georgia, there's a great deal of places that have mustard in the sauce. There's an old sauce out of Macon. It's actually one of the oldest sauce brands in America. There's a lot of places in Georgia that have some mustard in the sauce. And I have found in cookbooks, going back to about the Civil War, cookbooks published in Georgia, that there are mustard sauces mentioned. I would imagine that it probably spilled over from South Carolina from the migration patterns.
I would think so.
But it's not, mustard sauce wasn't invented by Maurice in 1948 and is a wholly owned subsidiary of South Carolina. It's broader and older than that.
Yeah. Well, we have our 48 states that are connected. Things do merge across the state lines.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Up in the mountains is a place called Jim's Smokin' Q in Blairsville, Georgia, up in the mountains.
It's your spot.
I've eaten there once and it's good, but it's also interesting because it has a pig-themed miniature park, miniature golf park right next to it.
Oh, that's cool.
Which I like. there's a place that up in Ellijay, Georgia, also in the mountains, called Colonel Pool's Barbecue, which you probably heard of because they have something called the Pig Hill of Fame. As you're driving down the highway, there's the hillside behind the restaurant and on either side of the restaurant. And for years, they've been putting up these little plywood pigs with people's names on them, and it makes quite the roadside scene. It's been quite documented in paintings and photos and things like that.
I didn't know that was where that was.
Well, he also figured real quickly into a story that I talked about in my politics and barbecue thing, because Colonel Poole was the head of the local Republican Party there. And a few miles away from him was another barbecue place that was excellent called the Pink Pig. And it was run by a guy, Bud Holloway, who was a personal friend of Jimmy Carter's. Jimmy Carter had a retreat up in the mountains there, and he got to know the Holloways real well and used to come in there. So Holloway was the Democratic barbecue, and Pools was the Republican barbecue.
Oh, interesting.
And they didn't really necessarily like each other. Holloway was really a big Democrat. He, after Carter left office, he told me that somebody came in there one day and was bad-mouthing Carter at the takeout counter, and he asked him to leave.
That's so funny.
But I just love that right there in this one, you know, and a few miles away in this one little community in the North Georgia mountains, you had these two diametrically opposed political barbecues.
That is incredible. That's really cool. You wouldn't think as much.
There's a place outside of Athens in Watkinsville, Georgia, called Hot Thomas, which is good and has a long tradition. There's a place called Zeb's, which is also outside of Athens, in a town called Danielsville, which is good. There's a couple of places in east central Georgia that I've been to that are good. One of them is called Heavy's. It actually has been used in several movies. I think it was made in Sweet Home, Alabama with...
Reese Witherspoon.
Yeah, they shot a scene there at Heavy's. But Heavy's is good, and I drive by it all the time going to my mother's folks down there.
Okay.
And then there's a place a few miles from there called Holcomb's, which is really good. I've only been there one time, and it was during deer hunting season, and I was the only person in there who wasn't wearing camouflage, so I knew it was kind of authentic.
Yeah, it sounds like that. That's a stamp of approval right there.
Right, yeah.
Jim, we could talk for another hour, and I would love to do kind of a part two of this. In a couple months.
Well, the book, like I say, the book is coming out in May.
Yeah.
It'll probably have a kickoff book event at the Atlanta History Center before Memorial Day.
Okay.
And I would be happy to talk about all that then. That would probably be the best time.
I think that'd be perfect. And yeah. I'd like to come out and visit, and I'd like to have some barbecue with you sometime.
Absolutely.
Excellent. Well, have a great day. Have a great week.
Well, thank you, and same to you. And best wishes.
Best wishes too. Take care. Thank you.
Okay.